The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Bonjour, hi. You know, I begin every day, every show with the John Androsic Fight for Fighting. This is the tale of your life. And the subject of that was in with me in the studio, not in the studio, at the house yesterday. John Androsic and Carla stopped by, and we ended up talking for 4 hours after I'd been over on Special Report. And then they went on their merry way. It was wonderful. Carla's an amazing person, and that story, which is about her, that song is about her story, it's a good way to get the morning going. I hope you are figuring out where you're going with your life, the story of your life today. It's Wednesday, February 16th, the year of our Lord, 2022. I'm Hugh Hewitt, not on the Beltway. I'm in the West Coast until mid-March because I don't like the snow. I'm from Ohio. You folks in Cleveland know this. Pretty much don't like the cold and the snow from January to March. I don't. And I gave it up a long time ago. So I flew back to California for 10 weeks. Usually I teach. I'm not teaching this year. And one of the reasons is there's so much going on. I'm actually focused almost 24-7 on the news. Here is the rundown. The NATO chief, Stoltenberg, said, not buying this Russian claim of withdrawal. European stocks have ticked higher again this morning, thinking this is the day of unity that they are celebrating in Ukraine, a day of unity, as they are menaced from around the world. And the deal remains very much in doubt. New York Times headline, on Ukraine, U.S. and Russia wage a signaling war to avert an actual war. How dramatic. Joe Biden gave a good speech yesterday, a good speech, not a great speech, but it was good. It was short. It was to the point. It's not one inch of NATO territory can be crossed without triggering Article 5. A necessary response to Vladimir Putin last week saying Article 5, what's Article 5, will be at the North Sea or the Baltic before you can say Article 5. That's not actually the case. They got the 101st and 82nd over there. Lots of other allied troops, lots of NATO. I don't think the Baltics feel like they're under the thumb that Ukraine is. Russia, Wall Street Journal says some troops are pulling back from the Ukraine border. The Secretary of Defense, we have an invisible Secretary of Defense, General Austin. He doesn't say much or do much, or we don't hear much from him. But they have a Secretary of Defense of the United Kingdom. His name is Ben Wallace, kind of a head down guy. Yesterday, he said that Vladimir Putin is a man looking for a legacy. Well, that's not a good thing. He was on ITV's Good Morning Britain this morning, a few hours ahead of us, obviously, saying that legacy could be a driving force for the Russian president. We are always in danger of miscalculation or indeed, as you say, a false start. And that would be catastrophic or tragic for the people of Ukraine. It could also spill. Ben Wallace went on to say that Russian forces have the potential to overwhelm Ukraine at 3 and 4 to 1 on the attack. What I said on Brett Baer's special report last night, I do not know how four administrations in a row have gotten Putin wrong. Is this a head fake? Is he going away? We don't really know Putin, and we never have known Putin. Cut number 28, I'm talking to Brett Baer on Special Report last night.
Hugh, where we stand today, is it much different than where we stood yesterday?
There's a head fake underway, Brett. I had Senator Dan Sullivan on my radio show this morning, and he said head fake. He doesn't believe Putin. I agree with what former Secretary of State Pompeo told you at the start of the show. Distrust and verify everything the Russians say they are doing. And the good news is the president gave a very good statement today. Not one inch of a NATO country can be invaded without triggering the defensive response of every NATO country. So we should give props to the president for clarity on that. But the bad and the ugly is, you know, why are we rushing arms to Ukraine at this late minute? It's not like this is a surprise that Putin has been menacing the country since 2014. And the ugly part is, he's actually played the last four administrations, including Trump's, pretty well in terms of surprising us all the time. At some point, we're going to figure out Putin is a mafia-like figure who's running a gas station, to quote Tom Cotton this morning. But we haven't figured it out yet. We haven't figured it out yet. And yesterday I received a text from a friend associated with NATO, I'll put it that way, saying the he thought it would be last night, the invasion. And so they're clearly, within NATO forces, clearly believe that Putin is riding a wave here and intends to go in. So don't let your hopes up. I know the stock market blew up a little bit yesterday. Just be forewarned is forearmed. NATO says Russian troops numbers are still rising all along the Ukraine border. So that is from the Financial Times, very reputable. Washington Post, Russia aims to ward off NATO in the event of a Ukraine invasion. There is no warding off America. There's none. There's zero warding off America because we're not threatening, and Putin knows it, and I know it, and it's absurd to report that stuff. President Biden did say there is room for diplomacy. I want to play his statement. This is Joe Biden yesterday talking about cut number four.
I will not pretend this will be painless. There could be impact on our energy prices. So we are taking active steps to alleviate the pressure on our own energy markets and offset raising prices. We're coordinating with major energy consumers and producers. We're prepared to deploy all the tools and authority at our disposal to provide relief at the gas pump. And I'll work with Congress on additional measures to help protect consumers and address the impact of prices at the pump. We are not seeking direct confrontation with Russia, though I've been clear that if Russia targets Americans in Ukraine, we will respond forcefully. And if Russia attacks the United States or our allies through asymmetric means, like disruptive cyber attacks against our companies or critical infrastructure, we are prepared to respond. But we're moving in lockstep with our NATO allies and partners to deepen our collective defense against threats in cyberspace.
I want to also play what former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said to Brett Baer last night, cut number 23.
Well, Brett, it's hard to go wrong with that Reagan aphorism. I might add distrust, but verify. I heard Putin today speaking, acting as if he was the peacemaker when he was, in fact, the person who brought all this current kerfuffle on. We shouldn't credit him for now making a statement that says, well, maybe it's time for me to negotiate and I'll pull some of my troops back. You know, the other thing we need to make sure to keep in mind, Brett, is that it's not binary. We talked about it, invasion or not. In fact, we saw the cyber attacks today. We'll see where they actually came from. But Vladimir Putin's been at war with the West for an awfully long time, and in Ukraine in particular. Can't forget he took one-fifth of that country just a handful of years ago. So we're always caught up in just the moment. We were working so hard at this, Brett. I met with my counterpart many, many times, Mr. Naryshkin at the SVR. Met with Vladimir Putin. Vladimir Putin thanked me and President Trump for saving lives in St. Petersburg.
Stop there because I also want to play for you Mike Pompeo talking about Trump, Russia, Pompeo, Russia, cut number 25.
Yes, it's true. We do have interest in Ukraine. I've heard some say that we don't have any interest there. I've heard others say we have maximal interest there. It's the case that we have important interest that we should defend them, but every situation is different. This one is certainly the case. Russia does have the impact that President Biden described. They can affect American lives. A big chunk of wheat flows through the Sea of Azov in the Black Sea. Energy prices, for sure. He can constrict and destabilize the market. He can mess around in the Middle East and present real risk to our friend and ally Israel. Vladimir Putin has many tools, not the least of which is still 1,000 nuclear warheads. We gave him at the very beginning of this administration, we gave him the brand new extension of New START, asking for nothing when New START covers almost all of our weapons and just a fraction of the Russian weapon systems. Those are the kinds of mistakes that lead someone like Vladimir Putin to believe that he can push around the United States. That's the big mistake. Just last comment here, Brett. People have asked, would this have happened under President Trump? I don't think so. I can tell you this. It didn't happen. And the only thing that has changed was who was leading the United States of America.
That's it. It could have happened under Trump. Well, it didn't happen under Trump. It happened under Obama, and it's happening under Biden. My last comment on Brett, on special report to Brett Baer last night was about why Putin can keep doing this for a long time. Cut 29.
Hugh, final word here. Do we think that it's still in the minds of people who look at this and the intelligence community an imminent thing?
Yes, I do. I've gotten texts all day long from people associated with NATO in Europe who expect it to go off tonight, that it's a disinformation. We will wait and see, but we should not be surprised by anything. And Putin is paying for this every day that gas is close to $100 a barrel. He's paying for it since Russia sells one out of every 10 barrels of oil in the world comes from Russia. So the longer he can keep the oil markets screwed up, the longer he's going to menace Ukraine.
That's the bottom line. He's making money. It's like he's got an IRA building at a rapid pace. The longer he keeps his tanks there, and we act like this, so I don't expect this crisis to be over. 1-800-520-1234. Your calls are welcome to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt on the West Coast today, joined by Congressman Michael Gallagher. Now a member of the vaunted House Intelligence Committee. Since last I spoke to you, you were in, am I correct about that, Congressman? You are now on House Intel.
You are correct, Hugh. I am.
Okay, first question then. And you got all the clearances, and you got to get read into all the SCIF stuff and all the different classifications and compartmentalized information segments. You got all the pieces of the pie?
Yeah, the first thing you do is you get a brief on whatever directed energy weapon is making the Browns play so poorly on the field every week. I can't go into further details about that, Q. It's highly classified, but it's out there. The truth
That the first thing you asked is, why did Brett Favre not go for it in last year's AFC Championship game? Tell me the truth here. That's what you said, right?
Well, yeah, and the answer is because he has been retired for a while. Now, Aaron Rodgers, on the other hand.
Aaron Rodgers has been retired. Oh, that's right. What am I saying? Aaron Rodgers.
Brett Favre.
Gosh. Well, that is a good thing. How many members are Intel?
There is about 8 Republicans and 10 Democrats, rough off the back.
Now, tell me how the committee actually worked. Former Secretary of State Pompeo, who used to hold this seat after former House member Tom Cotton, now Senator Cotton, held it after John Campbell, after Dave Dry, your fifth in a row. He was an Intel member, too. I think Cotton might have been an Intel member. So it's really kind of a deal to be on the Intel committee and come on the Hugh Hewitt Show weekly. But what goes into that?
Well, it's unique among the committees in Congress because the majority leader or the minority leader in this case gets to appoint people to the committee. The steering committee does not vote on it. It's solely a decision made by Kevin McCarthy. And then on the Democrat side, it is the speaker's sole discretion to appoint the Democrats on the committee. So that's what makes it unique. It's a permanent select committee. We, as you alluded to earlier, get access to certain information that even those on national security committees like the Armed Services Committee don't. And I think the main thing, however, is what used to distinguish the committee was that it was a place to do serious, sober, bipartisan oversight of the intelligence community in particular and the national security community more broadly. Now, unfortunately, under the leadership of Adam Schiff, the Intelligence Committee became, for an unfortunate time, the Impeachment Committee. But I can tell you that Ranking Member Mike Turner from Ohio, leader and soon-to-be Speaker Kevin McCarthy, are committed to restoring the intelligence community to that serious, sober role of doing oversight of the intelligence community, particularly in light of the threat posed by China. We have serious intelligence collection problems as it pertains to China. We've had public revelations in recent years that our Human Source Network in particular has been literally killed in China. The CIA is leading an effort to rebuild our cadre of China expertise. These are serious issues we need to dig into in order to keep the country safe. And that is what Kevin McCarthy and Mike Turner are committed to doing. And I'm very excited to be a small part of that. I was obviously a human intelligence, counterintelligence officer in a prior life, and I hope to bring that experience I have of doing intelligence collection in the military to the committee.
Now, Congressman Turner is a Buckeye. He's from Dayton. That means an Air Force guy. It means he's a Bengals guy. So he's got the Ohio thing going for him. He's got some, you know, grounding in reality. He's not going to fly off the handle at anyone very serious and sober. He has a sports blind spot. Do you get along with him? Does he know that you're nuts about Green Bay and you live there and all that kind of stuff?
We get along very well. We've worked together on the Armed Services Committee for the past 5 years. And Mike is really an expert when it comes to strategic issues, i.e. nuclear issues. He chaired the Strategic Forces Subcommittee on the Armed Services Subcommittee, as well as all things Europe. I can't think of another member of Congress who understands just the alliance structure in Europe, the peculiar issues related to NATO better than Turner. He also is a very sort of team-oriented person and really wants to leverage the unique expertise of everybody on the committee. So I think he's a perfect person for that role, and it's, in my mind, inevitable that he will be chairman when we take back the majority. I got to tell you, on that front, we are just really kicking butt in terms of recruiting very talented veterans to run for office in Congress. And I think they're going to come in and they're going to hit the ground running on all these national security committees, armed services, intel, and they're going to be part of this effort to get Congress back in the game when it comes to national security and get our entire government serious and ready to confront the long-term threat posed by China.
Yeah, I tell everyone, if I'm recruiting, from the jump, if I'm looking for a member of Congress, I want them under 40 and a veteran, preferably in combat, preferably deployed to Iraq or Afghanistan, preferably in the intel business or the special operations business or frontline troops, because I just believe it's the new great generation. However, we do want Ohioans in the lead. Let me ask you about what have you, since you've joined, 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago.
Have you had any briefings on Russia and Ukraine?
No, I got put on the committee with 1 day left in session, and we had one briefing on Iran that was classified, but we have yet to have briefings on Russia.
I'm curious. We have a war in the offing, a war that will require immediate expedited response if, as President Biden put it yesterday, 1 inch of NATO territory is violated. And they're awfully damn close. And a missile can go awry. And all of a sudden, we're into Article 5 stuff. And it goes. And you haven't had a briefing? Is that a deficit, in your view, on the Intel Committee?
Well, I will say we did have a briefing on the Armed Services Committee. We had a broader briefing to the entire conference, as well as Democrats and Republicans. However, there's just limits to what you can get into in that setting versus a smaller setting at a higher level of classification. That being said, what's interesting to me is I think this crisis in particular, in a way similar to the Syrian civil war prior to this, shows how much open source analysis is allowing even those who don't have access to classified information to track Russian troop deployments and movements in near real time. And so I almost don't think you need some sort of secret briefing to understand how serious Vladimir Putin is about invading. I don't really buy this story that came out yesterday that somehow he's pulling back. I don't see any evidence based on Russian troop movements around Ukraine that is credible at all. And unfortunately, this White House has yet again been caught flat-footed. They've been unable or unwilling to act with speed and urgency. They keep hiding behind this idea that deterrence only works if you threaten to impose sanctions after the fact. That betrays a complete naivety and ignorance about basic power relations and basic concepts underpinning deterrence. And so I think we've done almost nothing to convince Putin that he will face very serious costs if he proceeds. Speaking of Mike Turner, as well as Mike Rogers, the ranking member and soon-to-be chair of the Armed Services Committee, they introduced a bill yesterday that I'm on that actually would impose costs right now, sanctioning Putin's cronies and enablers before Russia further invades, reinstating the Nord Stream 2 sanctions so that project doesn't go forward, as well as, in critically, denying exports of semiconductor technology to the Russian Federation by applying something called the Foreign Direct Product Rule. Now, from there, you can hold in reserve a series of other actions in the case that Putin does invade. For example, Macron was actually talking about putting INF non-compliant missiles, intermediate-range missiles, in NATO countries by revising the 1997 NATO-Russia founding pact if Putin invades. That strikes me as a very sensible threat to make to Putin if he invades. There's a lot of things you can do, but we need to start imposing costs now, and we need to ensure the Ukrainians have some combat credibility on the ground. And our entire process of arming Ukraine has been a complete mess, Hugh.
Oh, by the way, it's a bipartisan mess. I want people to understand this. I told people yesterday, because I briefed a couple of people from the Trump years, Mark Esper, slow-walked aide for 2.5 years or a year and a half, whatever his tenure was, because he was afraid of the aid getting lost. And there was not just Esper, but civilians in the Pentagon didn't want to send over the javelins. They sat in boxes. They were afraid of the wrong people getting them. Putin has played us through four administrations. In Georgia under W, stopped him. Of course, he snapped up Crimea and part of Ukraine in 2014 under President Obama. Got the aid, slow walked through 4 years of Trump. We did get some over there. And then Biden stopped and started again. We are a mess. We do not know how to deal with a gangster.
And Hugh, this really is something we need to dig into on the Armed Services Committee. I'm just afraid the Democrats don't want to do any serious investigation or oversight that might embarrass the Biden administration. But it is a bipartisan failure. And we need to understand if this was a consequence of specific individuals and personalities in the Pentagon or the State Department slow walking assistance, the White House slow walking it, or whether it's just a reflection of how bloated and slow our national security bureaucracy has become. In the same way, I think just the general bureaucracy combined with White House ambivalence and naivety contributed to our fiasco and failure in Afghanistan. But as a great power, as the world's superpower, we need to be able to provide assistance much more quickly than we're doing right now.
Speaking of Afghanistan, a sidebar, John Andrzejczyk was over to the house last night, but on my aunt John Andrzejczyk, helping the evacuation effort still of American citizens, dependents, and SIVs. And I said, when he gets back to D.C. next, he has to sit down with you. I know he sat down with a bunch of members. He likes talking to the veterans. I had Sullivan, by the way, Dan Sullivan, another Marine on yesterday. He said it's a head fake. Putin's involved in a head fake. And then I got a note from one of my NATO buddies saying it's going off tonight. It didn't go off last night, but they're clearly not buying this stuff. Here's a sentence from my Washington Post column this morning, Congressman Gallagher. If Ukraine is pummeled quickly, it will be in large part on the failure of Esper and his team to deliver the weapons and training that to our ally that Trump and Congress authorized. Like Trump's long-promised expansion of the fleet, everything about lethal aid for Ukraine became a slog through the bog of Esper's Pentagon. That's based on report. I want people to know, I will hit the Republicans on this. We have just utterly failed to act with any kind of urgency with Ukraine through three presidencies.
It's a serious problem. I mean, it shouldn't surprise us that Putin has designs on Ukraine. I mean, this has been happening since 2014. This has been a modern-day laboratory for hybrid warfare that Putin's perfecting, and she is observing as this goes down. And we're going to see some very interesting things, Hugh. I mean, on both sides, right? Because the Russians are going to be going up against armed UAVs. That's going to be an interesting military problem. But I just can't emphasize enough how much I think Xi Jinping is going to school on this whole thing. We know the Russians and Chinese released a 5,000-word joint statement a couple of weeks ago promising endless friendship and no limits to their cooperation. This is a very dangerous moment. And finally, Hugh, I just want to commend, I listened to your interview with Dan Sullivan. Dan Sullivan, my Marine brother, is one of the smartest national security voices right now.
He's from Ohio, too.
Connect to this crisis. There you go. His ability to connect this with the terrible energy policy of the Biden administration is a point too many people are missing, and he was spot on with that.
He was. Now, okay, next week, Area 51 with Intel Committee member Mike Gallagher. Is that a promise, Congressman?
Yeah, that's a promise here.
I want to know where the Green Bay football fans' hopes went. I think it's Area 51, so we'll find out about that next week with Congressman Rep Gallagher. Rep Gallagher, now on Intel. The regular guest slot on the Hugh Hewitt Show has been, it's been a blessing to those who've occupied it, even though they don't know much about sports. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172.
Bonjour, hi, Canada, Hugh Hewitt. And to all of my 470 affiliates, you should know Katie Pavlik by now. She's been running around Town Hall and Fox News for a decade. Katie is one of our wonder workers who will be working these vineyards long after I've retired in a decade. Katie, welcome back. How are you?
Great, Hugh. Thanks so much for having me on.
I tell everyone, there's a whole group of young people in Town Hall who are going to be doing this for so long, it makes my head hurt. But given the pace at which you have to work, Yeah, in the old days, when there wasn't the inner tubes, you could get through a week of radio with like five articles. That doesn't cut it anymore, Katie. Are you ready for the new world and keeping this pace up?
I mean, I think that we've learned from the best, which is you, Hugh Hewitt, in terms of managing time and always working and packing as much as possible into a day. So we have good mentors that we can follow to get ready for this new breakneck pace that we're at.
It's a completely different journalism. I've got Scott Lehigh, who's a lefty columnist from the Boston Globe, coming on at the bottom of the hour, and he's an old guy like me, so we'll go at a regular pace, and we won't get winded. But Katie, I want to ask you about Durham, because I followed Durham out of the corner of my eye, and so it comes up last night on Special Report, and you do Special Report a lot, do a lot of Fox, and I'm following it through Andy McCarthy, because I haven't got time for everything. I've got a lot of time for Ukraine and a lot of time for the Chinese communists, but I haven't got a lot of time for Durham until he gives me something. What do you think is going on?
Well, I think that, you know, John Durham, to many people's, frustration, has been taking a very long time to get through this special counsel investigation. And I think we should remember that thanks to Attorney General Bill Barr, he is a special counsel, making it more difficult for the Biden administration to get rid of him once they came into office. And so in terms of what he's doing now, I think he's just being very methodical about going through the FBI's investigation of the Trump campaign, looking into very detailed specifics about, servers and who was doing what, and really honing in on what the Clinton campaign was doing. Because for so long, as you know, through Robert Mueller's special counsel investigation throughout the Trump administration, the Clinton campaign really didn't get much scrutiny. There wasn't a lot about the Clinton campaign in the special counsel investigation from Robert Mueller. John Durham's entire job is to take a look at the whole picture when it came to 2016. And I think he's finding that a lot of what was said about President Trump and the details of what the lawyers were doing and the attorneys was pretty sketchy, to say the least, and in a lot of ways may have broken the law, because, of course, it's his job to look at the criminality of all of this. So we now know that the executive office of the president was being monitored or looked at. We know that Trump Tower and President Trump's other residence was being closely monitored by the Clinton campaign. And, of course, this narrative about the Russia collusion came from the very same people. Now, how is this relevant to the current times and Joe Biden? Well, the national security advisor for President Joe Biden just happens to be someone who came up with this whole narrative about Russia. And, of course, when he's dealing with issues like Russia and Ukraine, you have to ask questions about, what we can trust when he is speaking.
When you use a lawyer, I brought this up to Brett last night. I don't expect people to remember John Dean. Joseph Alsup or Stuart Alsup, one of the two, called him a bottom-dwelling slug. He was the White House counsel, and he was the desk officer for the cover-up, self-described, of Watergate. And when Dean flipped, it all fell down. All right, so Dean said, this guy's guilty, that guy's guilty, that gal's involved. This guy, yeah, he did it all. He was the roadmap. And Sussman is John Dean. But Sussman seems to me to be acting like G. Gordon Liddy, who, love him or hate him, never said a word. What do you think Sussman's going to be?
Well, given who he's working for, the Clintons, I would assume that he wants to act like Liddy rather than speaking, right? So, the wheels of justice turn slowly, especially in these situations where there's a lot of research to do on what happened. Especially, and it makes it much harder if people are ignoring subpoenas or not giving information to investigators or lying to investigators, which is the accusation in some of these cases in the Durham probe. But my bet would be that he doesn't say much, that they fight back. The Clinton campaign is already saying that they're going to fight back against these allegations, dragging this thing out even further. And, I doubt there will be much accountability, Hugh, given the way that things happen in Washington.
I mean, don't get your hopes up. That's what I just tell people.
And doesn't mean they shouldn't look at it and continue.
And hope. And
again, Bill Barr deserves credit for making Durham a special counsel rather than just, an investigator, so that he has more protection. But in terms of indictments for people like Hillary Clinton, We'll have to wait and see. But
it's going to take a long time to get anywhere productive. I just want people to be patient. Now, Katie, I want to turn. You are my resident Second Amendment expert, and you actually know weaponry. I mean, you get it. You know guns. There's a case going up to the Supreme Court, New York Rifle and Pistol Association. Some people think it'll be mooted out. I think that the court is going to move to establish a standard of review for state and local laws regulating the possession of firearms. I am optimistic that that standard will be good. I am even maybe Breyer will join to get a decision. What do you think? Are you following the case? I know you're not a lawyer, but I know you are a skilled Second Amendment spokesperson. What do you think is going to happen in this case?
Well, I do know that the Supreme Court hasn't taken up a case on the Second Amendment in quite a long time.
Correct.
And there are issues not just in New York about there's a lot of questions about what local ordinances can do about concealed carry, for example. You've seen the situation in Washington, D.C., where they had to choose one or the other. You couldn't ban both concealed carry and open carry. You had to choose one, and you can't just say that there's this high standard for issuing of the right to bear arms, depending on where you live and whether you have threats against your life. And so we've seen precedent before that is in favor of people having the right to keep and bear arms outside of their homes, and that the government doesn't have a right to decide the cause for why they want to keep and bear arms. And we've seen around the country a lot of different local ordinance, whether it's in parks or at city events, where they have decided to ban lawfully acquired concealed carry permits from the state. This, of course, goes to a Supreme Court level and whether the Second Amendment applies, whether you're in a city park or whether you're, just existing inside the country and under the Constitution. So I think a lot of gun rights activists are excited to see the Supreme Court take this up. It's been a long time since a case like this has come before the court, and given the makeup of the court, I think people are quite confident that it will go in favor of the Second Amendment rather than against.
When I'm up on the northern border and somewhat alone, I will be armed and I will be taught how to use what I'm getting. My question is, right now you don't want me around a weapon. I haven't shot a gun since camp, right? Since I was 14. So that's 50 years ago. And I didn't hit the target. Couldn't see anything.
Well,
I had glasses.
Basic
then.
Safety will get you started.
That's it. Well, I got a Marine Corps colonel brother-in-law. I said, you're not going anywhere without me for a long time. But in any event, Katie, the key question is, I know the con law. The con law is it's an individual right. We haven't established a standard of review for local and state laws. Mm-hmm. If that standard of review becomes the same, it can't be strict scrutiny or every law goes away. And we don't want people to have machine guns. At least I don't. I don't know about you. I don't want to speak for you. But I want people to be able to have a carry permit if they want a carry permit, and they're reasonable. It's very, very easy. That's called intermediate scrutiny. Would you accept that as a guns right activist, perhaps the most articulate gun right activist in America? And that's a high honor and it's deserved for Katie Pavlik. Would you accept something that says if there's a compelling reason and you can prove it, we will allow the local restriction or the state restriction to stand?
I would not accept that. I don't think the Second Amendment is limited to where you live. And,
you want strict scrutiny.
Yes, I think that the Second Amendment applies to everywhere you are. It should not matter what city or district you're in to limit that right. We don't limit the First Amendment, just depending on whether you're going into a city park or not. We shouldn't limit the Second either.
Okay, what about a local law that only says you can have concealed carry, you can have open carry, you can carry everywhere you want. You can buy ammunition at the 7-Eleven, and we got a gun store next door. I mean, Kurt Schlichter's world. If we've got that, but you may not bring a loaded weapon into an elementary school. This is on the heels of the $1 million settlement in Sandy Hook. Is that a constitutional law?
I think that the Sandy Hook situation is quite different than lawful gun owners who have...
No, I'm not talking about... I'm just talking about that law. Can we prohibit a private citizen from carrying a weapon into an elementary school?
Well, it just depends. There's a lot of religious institutions like synagogues and churches, for example, that also have a daycare or a kindergarten or a school attached to it, and they want to make sure that...
Got one around the corner from me. Yep. I got a Jewish day school that is...
Make sure that those kids are protected from people who want to do them harm, so it gets a little more complicated than just...
I've got the finest Jewish day school around the corner from me, and I'm sure that they got Mossad guys on the walls, if anyone
sure
goes near there. I'm sure they do. But we'll come back again, Katie. Think about this, because they got to come up with a standard if they want 8 votes. And I would like an 8-1 vote upholding the right to bear arms and having a degree of scrutiny that may be between intermediate and rational. We got to have something. Can't be olly-olly in free, I don't think, but we'll find out more. Katie Pavlik on Twitter, at Town Hall, always a welcome guest. Don't go anywhere. I'm Hugh Hewitt.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.